Davis.
Romanus.
It's been a while.
You think?
I do think. And to respect our audience, I think that we shouldn't even go into why it's been a while.
Quite frankly, it would be way more extended than we would want it to be.
Right.
We just want to talk about movies.
Let's just do that.
That's what we're always here for.
Why would we ever disrespect our audience by telling them about our lives?
They're in the history of this podcast, which is coming up on 2 years now. We have never once wasted our audience's time with our voices.
Never would we imagine doing that.
We don't do rambles or anything like that.
You rambling?
No. I've never rambled. I've never heard you go off on a tangent.
Never me.
That neither. Nothing no, happens.
I've been raised better than that.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, your parents are wonderful people.
I'm a mute around my parents.
I believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. But I do.
Okay.
they live like halfway across the country. Both of our parents do. So.
We're Midwest boys.
We are Midwest boys. Yeah. Now we're Eastern boys.
Easter, yeah. Beast Coast.
Beast Coast.
Beast Coast, baby.
Eastern boys with, well, we don't have West End girls, but.
No. we don't.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Eastern boys with Midwest girls. I don't know.
My girl's from South Carolina.
Okay, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't work. I love that song.
Oh.
West End Girls. It's a great song, but you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't technically apply to us. We're just Eastern boys right now.
Did you know we have a podcast?
No.
Oh.
Is that what we're doing right now?
Well, thank you all for joining us.
We're back. And it has been a while, but we're just happy to be back to talk about movies again, and we're going to just kind of talk about the year a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's been a lot that we've missed in this time, but, you know, shit happens and we don't have to go into it. So we're just going to kind of dive right into a segment that we were kind of doing quite frequently throughout the summer. I was really enjoying it. You were really enjoying doing it, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take us off?
Sure. This is our little game. There's no official title, but I essentially read 3 headlines to Davis about the movie/TV industry, and you have to pick one to talk about.
I can do that.
Right. So here we go. Avatar Fire and Ash crosses $760 million globally after 2 weekends. The sale of Warner Brothers Discovery war between Netflix and Paramount Skydance. Oof. And the 98th Oscar shortlist in 12 award categories was announced recently.
Oh boy, these are real good.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
How do I choose one?
Please.
Well, I feel like the Avatar one will just end up being touched on at some point in this episode anyway.
Sure.
I feel like there's also a potential natural progression for us to get to talking about the whole Netflix acquisition of Warner Brothers.
Sure.
I don't know. That whole subject sounds very draining to me.
Mm-hmm.
So give me the Oscar shortlist. I'm not, I didn't see this. Who published this shortlist?
The Oscars themselves.
Oh, they published it themselves. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was like a separate entity that was predicting.
No, yeah. On the Oscars official website, you can go to each of the 12 award categories see the current runners in the, you know, each category.
They do that. Yeah.
Is there any particular category that you want to read off?
We might as well just do Best Picture. I mean, that's just the easiest to encompass kind of all categories.
Mm-hmm. So,
let's see, he had that tab ready.
Yeah, man.
He had all the tabs ready for all of his resources for each question. This man is calculated.
Let's go.
What do you got for me?
They don't have to. Do they not have the Best Picture?
Well, what is the short list entailing?
Well, they have animated short films, casting, cinematography, documentary feature film, documentary short film, international feature film, live action short film, makeup and hairstyling, music, music original song, sound, and visual effects.
They don't have any other.
So there's 24 categories In total, but only 12 announced for the shortlist.
Let's just do cinematography then.
Okay. So for cinematography,
what do you got?
There's quite a few. There's Ballad of a Small Player.
Honestly, great choice.
Begonia, mm-hmm. Die My Love, mm-hmm. F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, mm-hmm. Marty Supreme, mm-hmm. Nouvelle Vague.
Yeah, Richard Linklater film.
One Battle After Another, mm-hmm. Sentimental Value, Sinners, Syrith.
Oh, is it... Syrat?
Syrat?
Syrat.
Is that how you say it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
I've heard of that film.
Song Sung Blue, Sound of Falling, Train
Dreams, yeah.
And Wicked for Good, which I just recently saw.
Wicked for Good?
For cinematography,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, give me a break there.
So, are there any candidates that stand out to you in cinematography?
Oh, massively. Okay. First of all, I mean, you started with Ballad of a Small Player, mm-hmm. and it's nice to know that that movie is... You know, being predicted, I doubt that it'll make the cut because I don't know if you saw that film.
No, no.
It's Edward Berger who directed Conclave mm-hmm. and All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh,
and
my God. Okay, so he was killing it. I love those movies.
The really? Thing about Battle of a Small Player is it's definitely, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful looking films of the year.
Okay.
With, like, the most mediocre script you can imagine. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll really say about it, but it definitely deserves to be here because it's got a very neo-noir type of style. A lot of neon colors. Mm-hmm. Because it's taking place... What is the gambling capital of the world? What's the name of that city?
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's in Asia, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Milan?
No, Milan's in Italy. That's in Italy, bro. God, Jesus. Milan, you see where it's
going. Well, that is embarrassing, but we'll keep going.
It might start with an M. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the city. I should. But it's a beautiful looking movie, and it definitely deserves to be recognized for those visuals, but that's about as far as it would go, if anywhere.
Macau,
of course. Yeah. Macau. Wrong section of the world, but you know.
I'm a dumb American. I don't know where anything is. We get it.
Well, okay. You've been out of the country. I mean, how do you think I couldn't even remember the name, and I've seen the movie. Yeah. Give yourself a little credit here.
Okay, I have credit. Thank you, Davis.
You're welcome. I'm nothing if not an uplifting individual for this podcast.
I appreciate it.
But the standouts for me, I'm glad that was there. I haven't seen Hamnet yet, but I have a lot of mm-hmm. like praise for what Chloe Zhao is able to do behind the camera. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that's probably a very worthy candidate. One I really want to see. It's been compared to a lot of Terrence Malick films, which are slow burns, and that is kind of how the trailer looked. But it looks good. It mm-hmm. looks very good. My mother saw it. She thought it was delightful, but she also loves Shakespeare.
Hey, Mom.
So, hey, Mom. We're back. Hey, Mom.
Hey, Mom.
anyway. One Battle After Another would probably be my personal top choice on this list. Hmm. I did recently see Marty Supreme. I'm very glad to see that mm-hmm. recognized as well. Mm-hmm. I still have yet to see Sentimental Value as well, but I definitely believe that filmmaker is very much known for their visuals, too. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Sinners definitely deserves to be here, too, for groundbreaking cinematography by employing 70mm IMAX with the Ultra Panavision 70 cameras. Mm-hmm. Very, very monumental moment for cinema this year with that movie. There's some of the other ones. What else was there here?
So there's Frankenstein.
Frankenstein was terrific. The visuals of Frankenstein were terrific as well. Songs in Blue, which I think just came out. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Isn't that with Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman and Kate Hudson.
Yeah. The Neil Diamond movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't really give a shit.
Whoa. okay. We're back.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Train Dreams. If I were not to choose One Battle After Another, I would probably choose Train Dreams for this category.
You were flummoxed when you saw that Wicked for Good was on this list. Do you want to explain why?
Nope.
By the way, this is a short list, so I don't think there's a guarantee that all of these movies will be...
No, most likely only on five of these movies will actually make the cut.
That's exactly it, right? So, like, so what were your... What was your...
So, I think I'm personally going to predict One Battle After Another, Sinners. Oh, boy. That's... Beyond that point, it's pretty tough because I'm very biased because those are my two favorite movies.
I would say Hamnet. Like
Hamnet, I'm going to say Hamnet as well has a good chance. I'm also going to say Train Dreams. And either, I know I basically already named these, but either Marty Supreme or Sentimental Value, I'm going to guess.
So that's, you know.
Which are all terrific choices. If they decide to go with that, in my opinion. But something else can make the cut. Begonia can make the cut. I haven't seen Die My Love yet. I would like to. It looks really good. I think Formula One also deserves to be here, too, because just being able to capture what they're doing on camera visually is just masterful already. Yeah, I mean, solid list, I would say. Very few weak spots, I would say, in this list in terms of a short list. But... to me, it's we know we can kind of surmise which ones are going to definitely make the cut, and for that reason, who will probably win. And I think either One Battle After Another or Sinners has probably got this in the bag. I would personally really like to throw Train Dreams into the ring for that, though, too.
Okay.
Train Dreams is immaculate cinematography this year.
It's always tough when you haven't seen every movie, but... Man, Sinners just was booming off the screen, man.
Yes, it was.
There were just so many shots where I felt like I just wanted to stare at the shot itself when the vampire is first like introduced to us, and you see, you
the,
know,
like the house,
yeah,
and like
the sky,
amazing wide shot.
The sun is setting,
and then all of a sudden, his feet just leap into the frame and start running towards the house.
That might be
almost like a fallen angel from heaven, just like falling into the middle of the movie.
Sure, that's my shot of the year to me,
right?
Where I just am gonna remember where I was. There's also some shots in One Battle After the Another where definitely stood out to me, but Sinners, its cinematography. It's something I still think about.
I feel that. I feel that. That's a good question, though. Shot of the year. Like, what do we... Like, one that we just personally resonated with.
I just said mine, though. What about you?
I'm going to say... You remember the shot from One Battle After Another where Willa is in the bathroom and Regina Hall comes in when the trust device starts going off, and there's the literal mirror of Regina Hall behind Willa's character.
Yes.
And it's just this long take of her trying to get her to say the code words for the revolution.
That's a great one.
That shot is probably my favorite shot of the year.
That, yeah.
It's so fucking good.
That's so interesting how we're viewing cinematography, though. I almost look at cinematography as like a painting. Like, if I saw this as a painting, I would believe it. It would still be beautiful, but yours as far as the storytelling as well. I actually...
Well, I love portrait filmmaking, though, too. I mean, a lot of directors over the last few years have been really trying to utilize, like, portrait composition a lot more in cinematography, so really making it look like the people that you're shooting could, like, be hung in a museum, or the image that you have could be in a museum somewhere, and it's a really, really cool approach that I think a lot of modern technology has been able to allow filmmakers to kind of play with a little bit more.
If we want to go for more just cinematography / shots, this is not a movie that I enjoyed as much as you did, but for Weapons, when the children are running in the street, that actually was majestic in a scary way.
Yeah.
That also stood out to me too.
Well, I think a lot of like what publications have used for like reviews or conversations about Weapons this year has been that like annual iconic shot of the kid in the middle of the street with the arms out, with the shadows, the very long depth of field with the street that they're in the middle of. And I think that lends a lot of validation to you enjoying that, because it's like, a lot of us would see that opening sequence as pretty iconic at this point, just visually.
Yeah, shot of the year. I might have to think about more.
There's a lot. Like, I mean, there's a lot of great movies that have come out this year that have some really, really impressive cinematography.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like you could pick a lot of movies with those shots.
I might still go with Sinners though, just because maybe the first thing that comes to your mind is probably the answer.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a great fucking choice.
Yeah.
I mean, Sinners has just a myriad of amazing moments of cinematography. And that's why it's probably the most groundbreaking movie visually this year. Which, you know, could take it all the way. But, I mean, with this conversation of mine, I mean, we might as well just kind of talk about some of our favorites of the year. I mean, we're here to recap, aren't we?
Yes, but before we get into that, we should probably tell everyone who we are.
I guess we should. But before we do that, we need a quick word from our sponsor. Can you imagine?
Maybe someday.
Can you imagine if someone paid us to do this?
If some idiot wants to sponsor us, please do.
No, but you're right. We should. No. We don't sell out. We don't do that here.
No, no.
We just sell our time and ourselves and our money and our effort and our sleep. Anyway, we love you all. And we're really glad to be back, honestly, here on the Loose Leaf Media Podcast. My name is Davis Leaf. I'm here with my co-host,
Romanus.
And today, we're just kind of here to recap 2025's film catalog, I guess you could say. And we have many films, some great, some that we've seen that we did not feel were so great. And we just want to talk about, and overall, we just want to encompass exactly how we feel 2025 is going to shape the film industry going forward. Because coming to an end here, I think this is a much more monumental year than we kind of expected it to be going into it. Because like I said, we've been doing this podcast for close to 2 years now, and we had a lot of expectations for a lot of different films this year, and some films met those expectations, others didn't, some are in the middle. And we're here to talk about like what all of those films kind of mean for movies going forward and the kind of approach that can be taken. And personally, I think that 2025 has already proven the approach that filmmaking should definitely be going, which is giving a lot more time and energy to a lot these auteurs that made some pretty groundbreaking box office numbers in their movies this year, and originality with film felt like a lot more of the driving force of conversation than it had any year this decade.
I couldn't agree more. I looked at the top 10 top grossing movies of the year, and all of them, if you want to include F1 as an already established IP for the sport that it is, all top 10 movies are all established IPs, right? With
which is nothing.
It's new. Not right, like it's nothing new. Nezha 2, Zootopia, and Lilo and Stitch, all the top three grossing box office. And then if you look at
those, are the top grossing mafia, like domestically or worldwide?
Worldwide.
Okay.
If you look today.
Cool. Yeah. Interesting.
Yes. And then besides F1, which is sort of in that sort of gray area IP established, right? Like if we go to there's also Minecraft, Jurassic Park / Jurassic World, Demon Slayer, which is an anime.
Yeah, no.
All 10 are established IP, right? So there's still that focus.
Name recognition is still what's going to sell.
Of course.
But I don't think it's, not to juxtapose your point, but like I don't think it's what most audiences these days are really striving to see anymore.
No, and there was still a great number of movies that are original IP that really flourished either critically or financially. So top three to me, Eddington, Sinners, and Weapons, either just did really well as far as reviews are concerned and fan love and moviegoer love, or actually did get a significant return financially, right? So there's a lot of encouraging goodwill when it comes to the box office this year that I haven't felt in previous years.
I think one thing to take away from box office numbers, too, is, like, think about who's going to these movies as mm-hmm. well. So when you think about movies like Lilo and Stitch or Zootopia, it's probably going to be a lot of people with kids that are taking them to these movies.
Yeah.
And so you can't necessarily perfectly predict if there's going to be a conversation behind those movies or if those are just easier movies to take with your children to get yourself out to the movies. Which I think it's great that people are going out to the movies. I've seen Zootopia 2. I thought it was delightful.
Okay.
I loved it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I absolutely did. I loved the first Zootopia, and the second one did not disappoint me whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole thing I could go into about why, but I'll spare the time.
Right.
So that makes sense to me. I'm refreshed by the fact that that's a great movie, but at the same time, I did not see Lilo and Stitch. I was not interested.
No.
And for the same reason that people are taking their kids to Zootopia, they are taking them to Lilo and Stitch. And a lot of parents will have that nostalgia value playing into that fact where it's like, let's go see the new one because my kids haven't seen the original, but I know what it is, so I can gain some sort of enjoyment out of it. Don't want to speak for everybody, but those are accessible movies for people with children, and typically film is going to be viewed as a metric for entertainment. Beyond that point, the movies you just named, Sinners, Weapons, and Eddington, very few movies this year I have heard much more of a mass conversation about. And again, people with kids, we don't have kids, it's different social circles of people having conversations about movies.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I have heard constant people that have seen movies this year talk about those three.
Yeah.
I have heard absolutely nobody personally in my day-to-day life say a single thing about Lilo and Stitch or Zootopia 2.
That's surprising because Lilo and Stitch made about just over $1 billion, and then Zootopia so far, Zootopia 2 has made $1.4 billion.
So they've all, so
worldwide.
Both Disney movies have grossed over $1 billion.
Yes.
No surprise there, especially when you can factor in the nostalgia and things like that. But ultimately, the circles are just different. So there's obviously, you know, a billion people-ish, well, like half a million people out there that went and saw, or excuse me, half a fucking billion people mm-hmm. out there went and saw these movies,
mm-hmm.
got their money's worth, supposedly, but then, like, never talked about them ever again.
Yeah, probably.
Because, again, it's like, we don't run with those crowds of people that are going to movies like that regularly. We don't have a ton of friends with kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like even the friends that we do have that have kids would probably want to watch something better than that. Lilo and Stitch.
I've never seen Zootopia 2, and I think I've probably only seen the first two animated Lilo and Stitch movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing in me wanting to see the top three grossing movies in the world, which, I don't know, back in the day, there were tons of movies that were based on, hey, we're just trying to draw the audience where the parents with three kids, mm-hmm. are they going to go watch our movie?
Yeah.
But I feel like they're just, this is the first time in a while where I feel like movies outside of that audience could actually thrive. You know, that the people were excited to see movies like Sinners. I have heard people talk about Eddington. I have heard people talk about Weapons, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't typically just the cinephiles like you that mm-hmm. I know is probably going to see one movie once every other week
mm-hmm.
within reason.
Yes.
There were people that genuinely wanted to go out there and see these movies
mm-hmm.
for a date night, right? Or for just out of morbid curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I felt that since COVID.
Yeah.
Where the main IPs weren't the driving factors for box office success.
I would say that. I would say that since things haven't felt this way since 2019, I would say.
Mm.
We got a lot of movies. I mean, there were exceptions because it was the year of Avengers Endgame also at the same time, which was like the apex of everything that the Marvel Cinematic Universe franchise had been building up to.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you had movies like Midsummer came out that year. You had The Irishman.
Yeah.
You had Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You had these original, original large budget feature length films that were getting so much conversation from so many people, many of which were some of my favorite movies of that year as well. The ones I just named were some of my favorite movies of that year.
Mm-hmm.
You even had the first Knives Out movie in 2019.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And the trailblazing that that year ultimately did feels like this year is hearkening back to.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel fresh and new this year as we're able to see really strong original filmmaking made on a higher budget and what so many of these creatives can actually do now.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, one of them is about the COVID-19 pandemic and a satire about it, a dark satire about it. But it also kind of understands what it's talking about, too. Isn't trying to groundbreak anything, isn't necessarily trying to directly have an agenda, even though, I mean, you watch the movie and you look deep enough, it definitely does.
Mm-hmm.
But
so by Eddington.
Yes, Eddington. Right. But we're seeing movies this year where Hollywood has felt a little bit less afraid to take risks again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just hasn't been working for them post-COVID, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these movies, the original or IP-driven, have just not been enough to get people into theaters. And I think there's a lot of movies over the last several years that could have done a lot better had the timing been right for it, like this year. But I think for whatever reason, people have been opening their doors again to going back out to the movies. And we have theater chains that are doing so much more than they used to. I mean, we just saw the re-release of the Kill Bill film as one movie, yeah. The Whole Bloody Affair,
yeah.
Which I went to see in 70mm, and it was absolutely astonishing. Just what a motion picture that is. But I feel like a couple years ago, nobody would dare do something like that. Nobody would dare release start this trend of constant re-releases on different formats for movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that also that's kind of keeping the industry alive right now, too. Giving people the opportunity to see movies that they never got to see in theaters. Classics, which very few, you know, chains would do up until now. And now you have theaters like AMC that are showing Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. And I think this is kind of the direction that we need to be taking things in. If you can't get people into the theaters to watch new stuff because it's not unique or original enough and everything's so IP-driven or nostalgia-baity, then get people into the theaters by re-releasing older films in newer formats and having them at a cheaper price.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can work. We saw it many times this year.
So if for the new released movies of 2025, what were three movies that you would say that you loved? Just to summarize the year.
Well, I mean, my top three of the year, I would have to say it's One Battle After Another, Sinners, and Eddington.
Okay. I could have predicted that.
Oh, yeah, I basically indicated. I mean, trailed very closely behind with Train Dreams, Weapons, and Wake Up Dead Man.
Do you want to talk about your top three?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I want to hear what your top three are as well.
Well, One Battle After Another, Sinners, and you might be shocked, Materialist. I still love that movie.
That's actually shocking, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not on the same caliber for the quality of movie or writing that the other two are, but I enjoyed the conversation that it created. That's the thing about this year. There were movies that people were talking about.
People were talking about that movie. For
yes,
sure.
Even if there was anger, even for our episode, right? There were people from that listened to our episode of Materialist that were angry about our conversation on the movie.
Yeah,
and
we had pretty positive thoughts on it.
We did, and a lot of our women listeners did not enjoy the movie or just had a lot of thoughts.
Which the thing is, I enjoyed the movie. We pointed out a lot of its flaws too, but it's not a movie that I would be shocked if somebody did not like it. I can completely understand with that particular movie if somebody does not enjoy it.
And as much as I enjoy movies, I like talking about movies. I like the discussions, mm-hmm. even if they're debates, right? So it's
fuck yeah.
I it's hard for me to sort of repeat what many people have said, but right? Like I mean, just to summarize, really, a lot of women found it hard to relate to the actions of the main character, mm-hmm. right? Like would that character actually give up a life of luxury to be with the Christopher Evans character?
Oh, Chris Evans.
Chris Evans character, right? I don't even know if his name is Christopher.
Christopher. I don't know. Like, Christopher. Legally, his
you know,
name.
What was, well, who's the white kid from Winnie the Pooh?
Christopher Robin.
Yeah. I really was close to say Christopher Robin. I honestly Robin.
Wish that you said that first. Just like... Who would trade a life of luxury with Pedro Pascal for Christopher Robin?
I mean, look, I wouldn't.
I mean, I would love to talk to animals, and Christopher Robin could introduce me on how to do that.
I'm good.
Just kidding. He was actually mentally ill, and that's what the animals were.
Okay, Jesus.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing with Winnie the Pooh.
Did you see the Winnie the Pooh horror movie? Do you know
what I'm talking Blood about? And Honey.
Blood and...
Let me tell you something.
Did you see it?
I saw that in theaters like a fucking idiot.
That came out this year, right?
The second one did, I think. I don't know.
There was a sequel?
Yes, bro.
Blood and Honey 2?
Yeah. The Search for More Honey. I don't know. That's probably the title. I don't know.
Blood and Honey 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo. I paid money to go to the Regal here in Silver Spring and watch that movie. And there are very few movies out there that I would consider a bigger piece of shit. But you know what? I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny just to go to it and to say that I went to it.
See... If movie tickets were 10 minutes, I probably would be... 10 minutes. At $10, I probably would be a cinephile like you and just watch whatever. But the effort to go to a movie to pay $20 to see a shitty movie...
The good news is that was such an indie movie, I think it only was definitely like $10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was cheap. I mean...
If I was bored enough, I probably wouldn't.
It was so shitty. My ex at the time, she messages the fucking director on Instagram and calls him an asshole because I asked her. I was just like, hey, if you're going to message him, can you just say that he's an asshole? Just say that I said
that. Did he respond back?
Yes. He responded back saying, thank you.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's honestly a core memory of mine. It's hilarious.
Well, you did support the movie.
Yeah, ultimately, it's just like...
He's an asshole.
I was just like, can you tell him he's an asshole?
That's tough. I'm so glad that if I ever have a bad day at my job, no one messages me randomly.
You're
that
an asshole. Yeah,
I'm very fortunate for that.
I don't feel bad. That was like the most tax write-off movie ever.
Oof. Hopefully it benefited somebody.
Hopefully. Anyway, we're not here to like that. That didn't even come out this year.
Yeah, we sidetracked a bit.
What are the shittiest movies we saw this year? On that topic,
well, like shittiest movies. I don't know.
Fantastic Four.
Okay. Well, wait. Can I just say my most disappointing movies?
Okay.
I'm gonna have to go with just all the Marvel movies as a whole. Right, so I actually leave
Thunderbolts out of this.
No, I'm putting it in there because I didn't mind Fantastic Four. Actually, that's our biggest.
I know we actually released these episodes.
Yeah, we didn't release the
Weapons Captain America movie. Or One Battle. Yeah, we didn't release that one either, did we?
Ben, by the way, we trashed that immediately. We just had
part of the reason. I'm just like, honestly, I can't just scrub through a bunch of audio of us. Talking shit about that movie.
That
came out this year.
It did come out this year.
That's a funny thought at this point.
I really felt like the Marvel movies to rejuvenate the excitement in the entire universe was they had to have three home runs in a row. Like Captain America had to be a solid movie. Thunderbolts had to be a solid movie. Fantastic Four had to be a solid movie. And no matter...
This is why there is no hype whatsoever for Doomsday.
That exactly.
People are literally clowning on that movie right yeah. now because nobody can get excited. They gave us nothing to get excited for.
I would argue that for Spider-Man Brand New Day is just... The excitement is if people like Spider-Man, they're going to see it.
That's the thing. I think that there's hype for that movie.
But not based on previous movies.
Not based on previous Marvel movies, based on the fact that we're just getting another Spider-Man movie.
If you enjoy,
which is an exciting sentiment.
It is, but that is... That's not based on the movies, which I think is that's what they want. They mm-hmm. want people to be excited about the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Doomsday, for sure, is just... If you like Doctor Doom, if you just have Marvel excitement,
yeah, mm-hmm.
then you're going to see this movie.
We're all going to go see it.
For like, sure. But oh, I'm... Yeah, I talk all this shit. I'm
going to
see it.
I know. We're all going to see it.
But I'm not... My pockets aren't burning to see it.
No.
If I wait for the second... or third week to see it, that's probably going to happen.
Low key, yes. I agree with that, too. I'm not pressed. I'm only pressed because it's like, it's exciting for the notion to walk into a new Avengers film, but the idea is that we don't have expectations that it'll actually be good anymore.
No.
It's like our expectations are 6 feet under right now.
Especially after the first trailer where Captain America picks up a baby and they just
worst
say Doom.
Fucking teaser ever.
Maybe it's bro. Just a teaser for fatherhood. Like you pick up a baby after you quit.
Have you seen they made memes out of this shit. This is why I'm saying that people are clowning on this movie
yeah,
right now.
Because
they can't get excited. It was the worst teaser ever to debut for that movie. And it felt like a medication commercial.
Mm, it really did. Yeah. It was shot like If you have anal fissures,
ask your doctor.
Ask your doctor.
Analex is right for you.
Analex. Oh. Don't take this if you blink.
Don't take this if you are a previous super soldier coming into retirement.
Yeah, it is Christopher Robin picking up the baby and then Doom. It just doesn't garner any excitement, especially when you have previews of other movies in 2026 that
dead ass, man.
They put in even a little more effort and you're just more excited.
They hook you
immediately.
I'm just like, I don't give a fuck, bro.
And you,
I see that trailer and I'm like,
have,
I don't give a shit.
You have all of these characters with all this lore that you know you're bringing back, right? You're bringing back
mm-hmm.
Gambit. You're bringing back...
You got the X-Men coming back. Yeah,
there's tons of things that you could have done to make this more exciting, even if they weren't clips from
the actual
movie.
It's like, I know that they've
movie.
Been releasing different trailers for that movie, like mm-hmm. on a weekly basis, exclusively in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that they're probably better than that first one.
Like, probably.
They're probably so much better of a hook than that first one, where I'm just like, I don't give a fuck, dude.
No.
I do not care. That is the state that we're in right now with this franchise, that you put Captain America back on screen, or Steve Rogers back on screen, say he's coming back on the next Avengers movie starring Doctor Doom,
mm-hmm.
and I don't care. Well, matter of fact, I'm annoyed.
Well, he's not even Captain America anymore, right?
No.
Isn't he Nomad or whatever? Like,
who cares, bro?
Exactly.
Just like, who gives a shit?
And you were supposed to basically kill him off. Like, he was an old man the last time we saw him. How is he going to come
back? It's like, now
back?
You got Steve Rogers coming back, and now you have Robert Downey Jr. coming back as Dr. Doom, and it's just like, so did we even go anywhere with this?
No. And there's no resolution for Jonathan Majors as Kang.
I'm sure there will be, and it'll just be handled off screen.
Technically, he did get defeated by Ant-Man, but that's so anticlimactic for the character that we
but he's
know
in, like,
Kang.
The Loki show and shit, too, which continues...
Which happened before, after.
It continues after Ant-Man.
Oh, no. See, the... Just...
So it's like there is no resolution.
I blame Jonathan Majors.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know.
God damn it.
Don't hit women, bro.
Yeah. That's a hot take.
Is it?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, we got to retract that.
another disappointing movie for me, which is going to shock you, I'm going to go ahead and say I was disappointed with Mission Impossible, the final reckoning.
You know, it's so crazy.
The final reckoning.
I almost forgot part two. That came out this year.
And that's why for
and I really loved that movie, but it, yeah, I almost forgot.
Yeah, for a movie series that spans so many quality movies. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a bad movie. Mm-mm. There's just movies that I would rather watch than others, and there's 7 or 8 movies. There's
I don't know. Okay. 7, 8
Exactly. Let's go with it. I think
it's 8.
It just for these movies that span almost 3 decades. I think it's over. They do span three decades. Well, the first one was in 95?
I'm pretty 94 or 95.
Okay, so the movies are just as old as me and you.
We can round up.
Yeah, we've existed for as long as these movies. Yeah,
this franchise.
And I just feel like the closing of it all just did not meet my expectations. Still an okay movie. Even then, the last one just falls into those other movies where I say... Eh, like, not my favorite. Probably don't have to watch again. The last 3 movies just did not do it for me. Whatever. Who cares?
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, the thing... I felt emotionally fulfilled by that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of get where you're coming from, where I'm like... The more I've sat with it, the more I'm like, I don't remember that movie nearly as much as I wish I could.
Mm-hmm.
Where I did get a lot of fulfillment from it, but it's not... one of my favorite movies of the year. I thought it was exciting and engaging and a great fucking time at the movies and what movies should be about when you go there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's bottom tier Mission Impossible movie for my, where it's just like, there's definitely more than half of them I would probably say were better than this movie in this franchise.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, it's just like, there's a lot of shortcomings with it. I'm glad that the series knew to end itself. I feel like the ending is fulfilling and exciting, but it's also one of those movies where it's like you take it out of the theater, or if you're not marathoning through the franchise and the excitement is kind of minimal.
Mm-hmm.
It's exclusive set pieces at that point. Not nearly as compelling of a story. But, you know what? I get it. I get where you're coming from. Any other disappointments from this year?
That's it for me. I just to close out on the Marvel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If Doomsday isn't a hit, I don't know where else they go.
That's the thing.
It is really the bottleneck of that, the series.
Facts, yeah. That's bottom line. Like, where you can't go further than this if it's not good.
Man. Right, like, and for...
Like, it could still make $1 billion, but, like, if it gets just absolutely trashed, then... It's not going to matter.
No. Everyone's getting older.
Which is why they're doing this fucking Captain America promo for it with Steve Rogers. Like, oh, he's got a kid. Because, like, people that grew up with this franchise are getting older and having kids. So they got to see these already adult-ass heroes also grow up and have kids and do all this shit now.
Do you think they'll ever do a Junior Avengers movie where Thor's kid and...
I think that's what they wanted to do initially. Like, the young Avengers, which is why they introduced so much youth, like, Marvel characters within post-Endgames era.
Maybe they would include Wolverine's daughter?
Oh, yeah, X-23. Mm. Yeah. Why not? I don't care, man.
I don't want to see that.
I don't give a shit.
No offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the TV shows are for.
I mean I would watch it as a cartoon, but
that X-Men 97 show was really good last
year.
I
loved it.
It was fantastic.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to see season two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, what? So back to our favorites of the year, I guess. Since I don't really, I mean, I tried to avoid a lot of movies that I feel like would be disappointing this year. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, the only one I would really say was real disappointing to me this year was Fantastic Four. But I struggle to even call it a disappointment because for pretty much all Marvel movies this year, my expectations were pretty low.
Mm.
Which is why I would say Thunderbolts was the most surprising out of all of them to me because I thought it was honestly really good. Mm. I saw it in theaters and then I ended up watching it again on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is good. This is actually good, in my opinion. But Fantastic Four, I saw it twice in theaters because I was in such disbelief the first time that I thought it was that bad. And yeah, did not care for it.
Is there a movie that you wish that people did see that maybe didn't get as much love as or critical acclaim as other movies?
Probably. I mean, I got a list here. Shit that I've seen this year.
I have two.
Okay.
That, if you need some time. I'm going to go ahead with Black Bag.
Honestly, great choice.
Yeah.
Very, very good choice with
and
Black Bag.
And Warfare.
Okay, Warfare. That did come out this year.
Warfare did come out this year, and it did get a little talk, but I think that for what it is, right, which mm-hmm. is a war movie, it is going to turn some stomachs. It is very graphic. Mm-hmm. It is very violent, but it's... grounded tone actually was sort of refreshing in military / war movies.
Yeah.
The pacing is incredible, though.
It was really good. I mean, personally, what stood out to me for that movie was the sound design.
Oh, my God. You have to watch this in theaters.
I really don't think that there's a lot of movies this year that had better sound design than that film did. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. It's mm-hmm. a very well-constructed movie.
Yeah.
Overall. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, no worries.
I think that if there was like one other one that Black Bag was a good choice. I would definitely agree with that in terms of movies I would have liked to see more people talk about this year. But I would also like to throw Bring Her Back into the ring.
I've heard about that.
The Philippou Brothers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Their follow-up to their kind of modern cult classic Talk to Me from a few years back. And I thought this was better. This was better than that movie. It was one of the most evil fucking horror movies I had seen in a while, where it just felt like watching the movie would put a curse on you.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a sick and evil movie, but a very, very interesting concept in terms of like its conversations of occult rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's vague. It keeps things extremely vague, which just kind of like leaves you more interested in like how everything in the story really works. But yeah, I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of movies that came out this year that I would like list in like an honorable mention category. Like the film debut of Eva Victor, Sorry Baby.
I've heard a lot of good things about that.
A really, really soft kind of dark comedy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. I did see Mickey 17. I really enjoyed it. I understand the polarization with it, but I thought it was very good. Spike Lee's Highest to Lowest.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really good one. And I watched that like a month after I finally watched Akira Kurosawa's High and Low for my first time,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was one of the best procedural mystery detective movies that I had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Kurosawa, right?
Who would have thought?
And I think Highest to Lowest does a really good job of interpreting that movie for itself. And one of the best New York movies of the year, for sure. That movie just loves the city of New York, which is a very Spike Lee thing to do in general.
Right.
Spike Lee loves New York. But, yeah. Frankenstein was really good, too. The Long Walk. That was a really enjoyable movie.
Mm-hmm.
Companion. That was an underrated film that came out very early in the year. I enjoyed that one. Phoenician Scheme, Wes Anderson's movie.
Yeah. How was that?
I thought it was great. Okay. It was a great movie. Out of the movies he's come out with since, like, Isle of Dogs, I would say that was probably my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed Phoenician Scheme quite a bit.
Okay.
So, obviously, we had a lot of filmmakers that were coming kind of back into the fold this year. Kathryn Bigelow came back, too, with House of Dynamite.
Yeah.
I would also kind of call that underrated this year. Very, very tense political thriller.
A lot of people didn't like that movie.
They really did not. A lot of people did not like that movie. I think they didn't care for the lack of a catharsis the movie has. It doesn't really provide an answer as to like how the event unfolds, really. It's really just about the midpoint between the launch pad of the event, no pun intended,
right,
and the finale of it.
I kind of I sort of resent that from audiences when people don't really respect the movie as it is, or try to evaluate the movie as it is, and try to like wish for, they're almost criticizing a movie that they wanted to see instead of the movie as it is. That frustrates me so much that you want to reimagine the ending and you're holding it against the movie itself.
Yeah.
Evaluate the movie as the movie.
I don't know. For what it is.
Yeah. That I never got that.
I get that too. I think I feel that way. We all feel that way ultimately about like certain movies.
Well, right, like you need a perfect ending for every movie. You need just some resolution. That's not how life works. If art is truly imitating life, there's some things that just don't resolve itself.
Yeah. And I think this was a good year for the subjectivity, though, of film, too, in general. Because we had a lot of big names returning to filmmaking that we hadn't seen, and other names that had been making a lot of movies. Like Luca Guadagnino and Yorgos Lanthimos both released movies within the same week this year.
Yeah.
And both of them released movies last year as well.
Yeah.
And Bugonio seemed to be very highly regarded by a lot of audiences.
Out on Peacock right now.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I saw that in theaters. I thought it was very good. Not one of my favorites of...
Shocking.
Yours. Shut up.
Shocking.
It was not one of my favorites of Yorgos Lanthimos, because you would probably like it for this reason. I thought it was playing it a little safer than I expect from him.
Oh, maybe I will watch it.
Exactly. I feel like it's very tame for a Yorgos Lanthimos
movie. Oh, you mean it's a normal movie?
It felt more normal than most of his movies. It's still got his like weirdness, his weird atmosphere that he blankets his movies in, but it was like safer and basically just his take on 10 Cloverfield Lane, in my opinion. And then we had Luca Guadagnino that came out with After the Hunt this year with Julia Roberts, Iowa Debris, and what's his name? Andrew Garfield, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I thought it was terrific, but most audiences seemed to not like it at all. Mm-hmm. So a much more polarizing year for movies for that reason, too. Mm. Like you said, a lot of audiences didn't really care for that new Catherine Bigelow movie, House of Dynamite. People seemed to have a pretty general consensus on Frankenstein this year.
Yeah.
A lot of people went to see Friendship as well, the Nick Robinson movie with Paul Rudd.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people seem to like that movie, but also cringe comedy isn't going to be for everybody either.
No.
I thought it was really good, really funny, but I also have not spent a lot of time watching Nick Robinson stuff until really this year.
The I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. Yeah. There's some pretty
funny clips. Seen skits from it in the past, but I never sat down to actually watch it. Mm-hmm. And then shortly before, in the earlier in the year, I was trying to get into him a little bit more. And then I even watched episodes of The Chair Company on HBO this year.
Yeah, he has two shows.
Yeah, which is from, The Chair Company is from the same director, I think, as Friendship.
Man, that guy's having a quiet moment.
He's having a good year for himself. And I think it's only going to continue for him.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, he's, like, I thought he's really good in Friendship and The Chair Company. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, there have been some hidden gems, some polarizing this year, but it's been a good year overall. Train Dreams was terrific. Wake Up Dead Man, also one of my favorites this year. The third Knives Out movie.
I didn't enjoy it as much.
I've heard people were a little bit polarized on it, too.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I have not been disappointed, even close to disappointed once, with any of these movies.
I would be okay if they stopped that series.
See, I want them to keep really? Going. Yeah.
I think they do every other Thanksgiving.
Every right? 3 years, he's kept every a very consistent years. Schedule of Thanksgiving time, releasing a new movie.
And there's only series. Three now?
There's three now. It's a trilogy at this point. Yeah. Mm. Which, like, I would love to see him continue. If he cut it off here, I think he would be cutting it off perfectly.
Okay.
So, like, I like to subscribe, quit while you're ahead, but... ultimately, he can keep going, and I won't be disappointed by it.
I just think that the casts are becoming less impressive over time.
Sure.
The stories, the shtick of the whodunit just isn't as interesting. Even though that is its own sort of mystery genre, that people love.
That's the thing. The first Knives Out movie repopularized that over the last 6 years.
Right.
And so it's still kind of carrying the weight of it for its name recognition. But there's been a lot of movies that have subscribed more to the whodunit style or genre ever since Knives Out came out.
Right, because there's the Hercule Poirot.
Which are based off of Agatha Christie novels.
Yeah, right, like the Death on the Nile, right?
Yeah, Murder on the Orient Express.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, those books sell like hotcakes, mm-hmm. right? It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's not for me.
Sure.
Like, Daniel Craig, I love him, especially as James Bond.
Yeah.
The shtick just has kind of run out for me.
That's fair.
Especially since I feel like the scale... I wish that the scale would go up more. Like, instead of a church in somewhere in the U.S.
They kind of did that with Glass Onion, I felt. Where you could... Because they had the Netflix budget at that point, so...
Right. Glass Onion, I did enjoy.
They ended that movie with an explosion, so... Yeah. You saw the budget there.
So maybe they go up and down, right? Fine. I could also use a more globetrotter, like at least with the Hercule Poirot, which they are doing more.
That is
more.
Fair. I get that because we're specifically in Greece in Glass Onion, too.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily that you feel the Greek atmosphere of it, but the movie makes a point to note constantly that they are in Greece.
Yeah.
And so there is that globetrotting aesthetic that you have to it where it's just like, I don't remember where the first one or even the third one take place specifically.
For what?
Knives Out, but they're just like small domestic locations in America. So,
For the Hercule Poirot movies, they've been in Egypt on the Orient Express, and then Italy, recent one in Venice.
Haunting in Venice.
The Haunting in Venice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those movies at least look pretty, and they do keep consistent, good casts.
I've only seen the first one of that iteration.
I did enjoy. There was the one shot of Gal Gadot in the Murder on the Nile. Mm-hmm. She looked. I never really found her attractive personally. I knew, like, looking at her, like, yeah, she was a pretty woman, but like I didn't go like hooping and hollering, mm-hmm. beating myself over the head with a frying pan. But like
nobody does. So that's okay.
But I honestly, there was a shot of her in Murder on the Nile where I saw, like, okay, I kind of get it. Gal Gadot is a very beautiful woman. I just went on that rant for no reason. I forgot that I was
where are we
going
with this? Yes.
Yes. Gal Gadot is an attractive woman, guys. No, I'm just saying, like, Murder on the Nile is a great looking movie. It also does include Armie Hammer, so take for that what you will.
No, and Russell Brand.
Ooh, okay. Man, that movie.
Yep.
And even Gal Gadot isn't...
She's not the best reputation person in Hollywood right now, so...
Kal-El, no.
No. To fill the Nile, Kal-El.
Anyway, yeah.
I need you to bring me the stone.
Speaking of what we're looking forward to in 2026,
Gal Gadot.
I don't know what her career looks like anymore. Yeah, exactly. What movies are you looking forward to in 2026? If you had to choose three,
you already know, bro.
I know your first one. I don't know like the other.
Okay,
two.
Well, I'll wait for the first one then. Dune Part 3.
Okay.
I'm also gonna say The Adventures of Cliff Booth. The spiritual sequel to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
With Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
Written by Tarantino and directed by David Fincher.
I was waiting for David Fincher to drop.
We're back. Oh, we're God. Back. Y'all missed us. Missed me.
Is Leonardo DiCaprio going to be in that?
Unconfirmed. Unconfirmed.
Wow.
But Brad Pitt's starring as the lead, and it's about him serving as a Hollywood fixer, quote, now.
Wow.
And nobody really knows any plot details, but...
Okay, yeah.
I'm very, very excited for whatever the hell that's going to be, because that's amazing.
Okay.
I mean, It's a new Fincher movie, which is great, but a Fincher movie written by Tarantino?
Yeah.
That is historic. That's a historic collaboration right
now. Not only is that a historic collaboration, that is David's greatest dream.
Probably, yeah. Probably one of the greatest things ever happened.
If you could combine Tarantino's writing and David Fincher's
direction,
yeah, that's
probably going to be a perfect movie. And starring Brad Pitt is the lead.
Well, if...
It's over, bro.
If you want Davis to have his dream movie, that's it.
Yeah.
We have, you know, probably the same number one movie of 2026 as far as anticipation is concerned. I mean, I'll name my two. Street Fighter.
Okay.
And
you know what? Respect. You
like
to like.
I like, you know, I just want
I hope that you drag me to that. Out of all the crazy stuff I've dragged you to.
I would love for you to be there to watch it.
Like, when we recap that month, we'll definitely be touching on Street Fighter.
I mean, I'm pretty much 90% sure it's going to be a piece of shit. But but my curiosity... when I was younger, I was not good at Street Fighter games, man. The combos were so long that I sucked at those games. I was a better Tekken player. But I always just love Street Fighter characters.
Sure, yeah.
So them as a movie, I want to see it.
Have they made a Street Fighter movie before?
Yes.
What was that shit called again?
With Street Fighter with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Didn't they make like a one in like the 2000s?
They made a Chun-Li one, yeah. Chun-Li.
Yeah.
Revenge or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They tried to keep the IP as much as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's why it's happening, right? Because they probably have to make the movie
probably,
or else lose the rights.
But they have a ton of characters. They have a ton of celebrities coming as characters. Like 50 Cent is Borog and
in the new one?
Yes, bro. 50 Cent is in it.
Who's in this movie?
You want the full cast? Honestly, I was not prepared to talk about the cast.
We're losing listeners right now.
Yeah, especially
they're just like, actually, I don't want to hear this cast.
The demographic of our cast is really of our listeners is probably 80% women, and they probably have not even. They've heard of Street Fighter for sure, but they are not going to watch this movie.
They're going for the eye candy.
Of course. Yeah. 50 Cent. So 50 Cent is Balrog. Jason Momoa. Roman Reigns, who's a WWE wrestler. I'm trying to see other people. Eric Andre is in it. I forgot that.
Okay, so it's going to be a joke.
And then Andrew Schulz, who's a big podcaster. Mm-hmm. So those are just some of the most prominent names. I can never say his name. David Dausch Mal.
I know who you're. I know exactly. Yeah, I can't. I can't pronounce it. I know who exactly you're. He's a great actor, though.
He is a really. He's a good character actor.
He's a great character
actor. He's gonna be Bison. So I'm excited to just see these characters in real life.
Oh, who's playing Baraka?
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding. That's a Mortal Kombat character.
It really is. My dumbass just looked.
You were ready? Yeah. You were ready to answer.
By the way, Mortal Kombat is coming out next year, too.
Oh, yeah, the second one.
That
was supposed to come out this year.
Yeah, but they pushed it back.
And they're just like, I don't know why they did that, honestly. Like, nobody's going to go see it anyway.
I'm going to see it because I want to see it.
That was one thing I liked about the fact that they released the first one during COVID, essentially, is that it just got really dumped right on Hulu. Mm-hmm. Or not Hulu, HBO.
Yes.
And so I did watch it right when it premiered. And I was just like, why not? Because it's here.
You know, what the stuff for Scorpion actually was pretty good.
I liked that Sub-Zero was the villain.
Yes.
The I thought that was the coolest element to the film.
Yeah. But again, these movies is just to watch. Like, I don't know of any, like, Oscar bait movies of 2026 yet. This is just for my pure entertainment. I'm going to watch these movies.
What's the other one? We've talked about Street Fighter for way too long.
Doomsday. Like, even if it's terrible, I want to
more than Disclosure Day, huh?
What is Disclosure Day?
Spielberg's new movie.
Oh, yes.
First science fiction movie from him.
Well, I'm looking forward to Doomsday just to add a morbid curiosity. If it's a bomb, I want to be there. If it's the greatest movie I've ever seen, I want to be there too. But I'm sure that Disclosure Day, I'm going to enjoy it. Like, it's Spielberg.
I'm curious why you wouldn't be more excited for that, though, over Doomsday, then.
Over Disclosure Day?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, no, you said it right the first time.
Yeah, I thought I did. What fuck off?
Yes, I should stop.
Give me your wine. You're not drinking it.
I am drinking it. I can't drink while I'm recording.
I just finished a glass.
Well, I'm a professional.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, I will finish the wine. Davis did pour me a very nice glass of red wine, though. Mm-hmm. I will give you that. You're killing it on the Merlot.
I appreciate it. So seriously, though, like, what if you have higher expectations that Disclosure Day is going to be better than Doomsday, why wouldn't mm-hmm. you be looking forward to that movie more? Like, what's your logic here?
I'm like that meme that's like, I'm going to my enemy's funeral to make sure that they're dead. You know, I just...
But you'd rather go to your enemy's funeral than your friend's birth?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I just...
You are not that petty, though. That is not your sensibility.
Well, no, like, legitimately, though, if... For the Wolverine and Deadpool movie,
mm-hmm.
I loved all the cameos. I loved the moments of, let's just make fans happy. And
like make an ass of the series while doing it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
but that was, that was the Doomsday way to do, not the Doom, that was the Deadpool way to do it.
That was the Doomsday waiting room, yeah. Essentially.
Yes. a way to think of it, actually. But in Doomsday, really, you should do all those cameos, but in a dramatic fashion.
But that's the thing. Like, in Deadpool and Wolverine, like, we weren't meant to take any of this seriously, which made it easier to stomach for that reason.
Yes.
In Doomsday, it's just like, we're expected to be subjected to more constant pandering fan service, but... Mm. Take it completely seriously with a straight face. And that's harder to do now. Like, we need to be impressed at the same time, but what they're actually accomplishing on screen. It's not enough to just bring back Tobey Maguire or fucking Patrick Stewart anymore.
But again, I am driven by the morbid curiosity. If they can make it work somehow,
mm-hmm.
I want to be there to see it. If it blows up in their face... I mean, it's going to make for an entertaining podcast episode at the very least.
For that reason, I will say that's true.
Right.
And we also are getting Doomsday because neither of them are moving right now.
No, yeah.
Dune Part 3 and yes. Doomsday are releasing on the same day next December.
Oh,
and
that's going to be a great double feature.
Doomsday, bro.
Maybe we should do it as a double feature.
Yeah, it feels like the only forced Barbenheimer thing that will probably actually work.
I'm willing to say that Dune Part 3 is just going to be a better movie no matter what.
It's going to be a better movie, and I'm also willing to say that one of them will cave. One of them will cave. Because you know what? The number one thing that they're fighting for is not just the box office, but IMAX screens.
Yeah.
Like, only one of them is going to be able to be shown in IMAX. They're not going to flip-flop back and forth showtimes.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
I think it should be Doomsday that caves. Because Dune, I know, will be a movie that I want to see on IMAX, right?
But that's also going to be, like, a better holiday movie, too. Where it's just, like, around this time of year.
Yeah.
Like, releasing around Christmas.
Sure.
And a movie that's exciting and it's also good.
Yeah.
So, I think I would agree.
That's a tough one.
I think that one of them will cave. It would be cool if Doomsday actually does happen, but it's way too competitive. Like, when Oppenheimer and Barbie went head-to-head, that was normal competition. Because they were two vastly different movies.
Two different audiences, right?
Exactly. Like, we're about to get 2 3-hour epics made to be played on the largest screen possible.
Well,
and they're going to be fighting for space.
Like, I'm going to put quotes around that 2 3-hour epics part because really, for sure, there's one. I'm pretty sure Doom Part 3 is going to be a good movie. They made two good movies in a row. I have expectations that the third one is probably going to be good. Doomsday, they had we can agree, in the last three Marvel movies,
mm-hmm.
two not good movies, and then one movie. But I don't know. Like,
sure. Yeah.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So they need to. I just don't have as much confidence in Doomsday, but you that do. Makes me more curious.
I think to your point that Doomsday will leave makes it more likely for the fact that people have more confidence in Doom.
Yeah.
Or in Dune. In Dune yeah. than they do in Doomsday.
Yeah.
Which means public opinion is going to shape what kind of course correction Marvel takes with Doomsday.
Yeah.
So we'll see, though. We'll see.
We will know after the trailers drop for both movies.
Because which, yeah,
Robert Pattinson real. Is in Dune Part 3.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's going to be prominently... featured
allegedly in, playing the villain in the movie too.
See, and I mean his career,
and he's playing the villain in like two movies, two yeah. massive movies releasing next yeah. year. Which number one we haven't even talked about yet, the one that we're looking forward to the most.
Well, why don't we?
Well, let's touch on it. The Odyssey.
I mean, come on,
it's obviously the who's most anticipated movie in next year isn't The Odyssey.
I think I was thinking that. Would you rather see a Quentin Tarantino movie? Like written Quentin Tarantino movie mm-hmm. that's directed by David Fincher or Christopher Nolan.
The Odyssey, Christopher Nolan.
No, but I'm saying like just like
The Odyssey.
Okay. Why
the
you,
Odyssey?
Why
the Odyssey?
Why?
It's the literal. It's the epic, bro.
Right.
It's the epic.
Mm-hmm. I see the you, epic form. You of have story. A printed. Version of mm-hmm. the book Homer, The Odyssey by Homer.
Yeah, I have two. I have this version and I have this other translation of it that's more prose. And I have been rereading through the more normal translation of it throughout mm-hmm. this year in preparation mm-hmm. for the movie next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great, great fucking story. I've read it. This is my third time in my life reading through it. But it is a great story. But I saw the. I was fortunate enough when we went to see, or when I went to see Avatar: Ash and Fire, which I also very much enjoyed this year. Shout out to Avatar 3. To see the prologue for The Odyssey in front of that movie, which was 6 minutes of footage from the movie, mm-hmm. like one particular scene playing. And it ruined Avatar for me because there was not a single moment in Avatar that was better than that 6 minutes of the upcoming Odyssey movie. And then a few days later, they dropped the full trailer.
Mm.
And it's one of the greatest trailers I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and saw Marty Supreme in 70mm on Christmas. And they played that trailer in 70mm right before Marty Supreme started. And yeah. Pardon me. So, all this to say, I mean, it's honestly hard for me to imagine that I've ever been more excited for a movie.
Mm.
I'm pretty fucking over the moon for how excited I am for that movie.
Especially after Oppenheimer, right? Like, yeah. Christopher Nolan just keeps taking his movies to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
I even after The Odyssey, I don't know how he does it next. It just, I
don't either. He can make a political thriller feel epic, like with Oppenheimer, and now we have him taking the reins on the like fantasy epic,
mm-hmm.
like Greek mythology, history, something really grounded. With like medieval roots, and I think this is probably his most ambitious film, while at the same time all signs are pointing to him this being his biggest film critically and financially. You know, he's already working with the largest budget he's ever had with this movie, so you know he's gonna authenticate as much as he can.
Wow.
Yeah. So
there's still a lot to look forward to in 2026.
I think there is. I mean, we have a lot of movies coming out next year that mm-hmm. we're looking forward to. And I think with movies like Disclosure Day and Dune Part 3 and The Odyssey, and a lot of these movies are being shot on film. And I think directors, especially that old generation of directors, and not to say that like Christopher Nolan's old, but he's getting to that point where he's becoming part of that older generation of filmmakers too.
Mm-hmm.
Much like a Scorsese or a Spielberg. And he is just kind of cherishing the way that movies used to be made and still making them for larger contemporary audiences today. And I think what's just so exciting about what next year is going to have in store for us is more films that are going to kind of challenge the zeitgeist of everything that we've seen over the last several decades.
Mm-hmm.
And pushing the boundaries of what was capable in filmmaking, too. And honestly, that goes for television, too. You have a lot of good television coming out.
Oh, my God. Year. Even in January.
I mean, January alone, we're going to be busy. So, I mean, it kind of seems like the direction that we're going to be taking with the podcast next year is going to be us kind of doing monthly recaps of things that have been released, things that we've watched, and just where the culture is now in film. And I think that that's going to be, like, give a lot of people time, ourselves included, to kind of breathe the air of where things are and absorb things and not feel so, like, time-sensitive on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because we kind of know how this industry works in terms of, like, our position in it. People want to talk about things quickly. They want to get in on the conversation while it's hot. But ultimately, it's just like, look at movies this year. Movies like Sinners and One Battle After Another. The Marvel films. Like, the conversation technically really isn't going anywhere. It's going to remain where it needs to be for as long as it needs to be there. And there's always going to be an opportunity to get in on that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a good thing. I think it really proves that film is back. We are back.
We're back. And
2025 is the first year in many, many years where I can actually confidently feel like we are back.
You said it great. I really am excited for the direction of cinema in the next year. There's, as I look at the list of movies coming out in 2026, there's definitely a lot of already well-established IP, but there's also movies that, you know, we're very much looking forward to. Mm-hmm. There's just so much excitement going on. There's enough movies that we know are going to be home runs, and there's enough movies where I know will create controversy and conversation that really gets me excited more than anything. 2026 is going to be great.
I'm thinking it's going to be a good year.
Yeah.
I think I want to be more selective, though, this year, too. I mean, to give us the opportunity to kind of, like, talk about things a little bit more directly if we're doing, like, monthly recaps, I want to be more selective on what we go to see. So I know for sure in January I'll definitely be going to visit 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, which, shout out to that movie from this year too. Also a massive, massively great film this year. Like one of the best of the year also.
Mm-hmm.
Should be getting more recognition, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely something that we'll end up recapping by the end of January too.
Yeah.
But things move quickly, you know? The culture shifts very quickly. The conversation shifts very quickly. And I think that there'll always be something for us to talk about here on Loose Leaf Media.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of art and the beauty of cinema in general. We're in a very... you could argue we're in a golden era right now. Things are shifting, transitioning for better or worse when you consider, like, the acquisition deal with Netflix and however the hell that's actually going to look. But it's still an exciting time to talk about cinema because it is very much alive and well. And 2025 proved that. And I think that'll carry over into the next year.
I agree.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, do you have any other thoughts or recaps for us this year, Romanus?
No, I mean... I hope that everybody has a great 2026, as good as 2025 was to Pedro Pascal. Hopefully you get a lot of work. Hopefully you get a lot of success. Cheers.
Wonder whose year it's going to be next year.
It might be Pedro Pascal again.
The
Mandalorian and Grogu.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Doomsday...
He's
probably going to be in Devil Wears Prada 2
somehow. If he doesn't, that would be kind of crazy.
He's going to be in Jumanji 3.
Well, shit. He's like, I'm sticking around, actually. I'm going into this year.
Pedro Pascal, it's his moment, man.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, you know what? There's worse people to have a moment.
Yeah. Exactly.
We liked him. I was going to say Timothy Chalamet, but.
He's definitely on the come up, too. He's probably the biggest movie star in the world.
It's a good chance he's about to win his first Oscar for Mighty Supreme. Mm. And personally, I think it would be well deserved. Whoa. It was a terrific movie.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. And so, don't look forward to us doing too many, singular reviews in 2026. Maybe every now and then. We'll see if something, probably for things like The Odyssey or, Disclosure Day, the very few and far between. But we're looking forward to just kind of doing more recaps and conversations. So that ultimately opens up the door for more of our listeners here, the very few of you that are probably sticking around after our hiatus for the last few months, to give us ideas on what they would like to hear us talk about during our monthly recaps, because we'll have an endless library of concepts and things going on in the industry that are worth talking about. So please always feel free to hit us up and let us know what you think we should be talking about. We have our email is always in our description if you want to send us an email. Otherwise, you can message us on our Instagram at @looseleafmedia. We're always looking for new, fresh takes and things to conversate about on the podcast, because we love that there are still people out there that are willing to listen to us, even when we do drop off the face of the earth for no reason. Mm-hmm. Anyway, more than anything, it's been so great to get back into the stew with my wonderful co-host here to just kind of cap off the year, because it's been a good year. It's been a good year.
I think so.
Yeah.
Best year of my life.
Really?
Yes, man. This has been a great year. So much stuff is going on. Very happy. This is all around. Great life.
He's happy, everybody.
I'm very happy.
We took a hiatus, and he's now happy.
Yeah. By the way, Pedro Pascal will be in the Michael Jackson movie. Jackson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's playing MJ.
He's playing, yeah.
He's Pedro playing Pascal Mike Jack.
Yeah, he's playing Mike Jack. No one's ever called Michael Jackson Mike Jack.
Never.
Never.
Never. That's not a thing.
I was just looking at all the movies. Pedro Pascal's only in two movies next year.
Just Mandalorian and Avengers?
Yes. That's a slow
year. Still a lot.
For him, it's a slow year.
That's true.
But yeah, 2025 was amazing. 2026, so many plans, this podcast, a lot of travel.
We're excited.
Oh,
we're
my excited. God.
Who knows where we're going to take it, because this is our first full year doing this, and it's been good. It's been really good. I've enjoyed doing it, and I can't wait for next year to have another full year.
More rambles, more ways to piss you off.
More rambles, more tangents.
Yeah.
More making each other angry, more hot takes.
Yeah.
More of you liking Fantastic Four and you hating weapons and me feeling the opposite.
I can't wait.
I cannot wait. And I cannot wait for everybody out there to stick around with us if they can bear our voices.
Yes. And I'm thankful for Davis.
I'm thankful for Romanus.
Aw.
And a resolution, I would say, for the new year is just to be able to keep seeing this guy in any form that takes. Hopefully, the podcast will factor into that. But if not, it won't matter, because it's really what the real podcast out there is the friends we made along the way.
I agree. I couldn't agree more.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, Happy New Year, everybody. And from both of us here, this is the Loose Leaf Media Podcast. My name is Davis Leaf. I did this with my co-host,
Romanus.
And we will see you guys in the new year.
Bye.
Take care.